Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This week, I'm interviewing a dear friend, Junko, who has her own podcast, Return to Wonder. Earlier this year, we did a swap cast where Junko interviewed me and I interviewed her. At more than 2 hours, I absolutely did do some editing, and all the good stuff that you've come to expect from this podcast is here this week. But there are a few things I want to do before we dive in, and that's give you a little bit of background on some of the things that we talk about. In the podcast, Junko talks about the religion of Shintoism. Shinto translates as the way of the gods, and it's an indigenous faith of the Japanese people and as old as Japan itself. Shinto gods are called kami. Kami are sacred spirits which take the form of things and concepts important to life, such as wind, rain, mountains, trees, rivers, and fertility. Humans can become kami after they die and are revered by their families as ancestral kami, and the sun goddess Amaterasu is considered Shinto's most important kami. In this conversation, we talk quite a bit about those spirits and the spirits that Junko has seen from her childhood. I know we've talked about spirits being in the land and the wind and the rain before, but for my guest this week, those spirits are so much more real and so much more concrete than even what I've experienced. I love the generosity of spirit that my listeners afford my guests because everyone has a different worldview, and honestly, we each communicate with what's around us in different ways. This week, I was really excited by my conversation with Junko because so much of how she experiences the world is kind of like how I would like to experience it one day. A little bit about Junko, who is kind of the most fabulous human being you're ever going to want to meet. She describes herself as a catalyst, multi-systems convener, and leadership advisor. She's a strategic spiritual catalyst, and she applies 20 plus years of systems change and creative communication experience to activate leaders who lead with healthy mind, body, and spirit to grow their business. She deals with so very much when she engages with you. She wants to crack you open to everything that is possible for you, reflect your brilliance and your shadow, and in this way, bring powerful leaders to the world. So now, that's enough of me talking, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. And when you think about the miracle or the magic with this week's episode, please understand that Junko views her entire existence as moving through magic, that it's all around her, that it encompasses every parcel and piece of the world she lives in. So now, episode 146 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
There was a trip that I took in 2018 or so to Egypt, and a lot of people there, and it was a spiritual trip, you know, folks who were getting introduced, a significant chunk of the population of that group was from India, and they just really needed to see globes of light in their photos. And so, you know, they just kept on, like, every single place that we would go to, they would just, like, take photos, and I'm like, you guys, experience the land, you know, look at it with your own two eyes, not through the lens. So right now, I self-describe as a catalytic leader, and that kind of captures a lot of the different components that I actually do and show up in the world. So whether it's, you know, like fundraising or being an entrepreneur and bringing teams together, expanding somebody's vision, another entrepreneur's vision, doing management strategy and international marketing strategy, whatever, or even, you know, politician, like if you're trying to get a message out to certain populations, and the most experience that I've had is in politics. So if you're a constituency and you want to get your message to your politician, how do you do that? You know, those kinds of things. So I would say a catalytic leader, and I say catalytic because I usually enter somebody's life just as they need to shift and they're not quite doing it. And so for some, if they can receive it, it'll be like boom, bam. And you know, it just kind of like happens really fast, pretty intense. And then it's like done. You know, and then others, it's more of a conversation and a slower process, a much more gentle process, because that's what they need. And others, it's just me witnessing them and that's it.
You're kind of like the swift kick in the pants that they need.
Right. Yeah.
And also yeah. There's like so much there's so much imagery of fire in that, mm-hmm. you know, that spark, because the old catalytic converter that I'm thinking of in cars, you know, provided the spark that like got mm-hmm. everything going. So I love that word. That's mm-hmm. such a great word, because you're helping people shift. You're helping them see possible opportunity that they're missing, mm-hmm. possibilities for their life. You know, you just helped me see a possibility for the back of my neck and my throat. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of in this really powerful position.
Mm-hmm.
Is it stressful?
Yeah. You know, it's a balance. It is stressful to the point where sometimes I'm like, I really don't want to be here anymore. And so on my blog, I actually wrote a piece on how I got out of the suicidal thought, because I grew up having a lot of suicidal thoughts since I was 6 years old. And it was very clear. And I could even remember what I was thinking, what was happening. Like, I don't remember exactly what precipitated it, but I grew up in a pretty intense household. And so, and you know, many kids also, I have 7 siblings and I was number 3. So it wasn't an easy task to just navigate not having my own space, you know, or having to have all these tasks that we had to do as children. And I'm seeing all my other my other friends playing and being taken care of. And we kind of had to take care of each other, you know, those kinds of things. Cause both of my parents were full-time doctors, really busy and taking, you know, providing support for us. But as a child, you're like, why can't I play? You know, anyway. So it's very stressful in the sense that I could feel everyone. And it's not just people. I could feel the land. I could feel spirits. I could feel energies that are still there, the thought energies that it linger. And so when I came into my skills of clearing a lot of that stuff, there was plenty to work with for sure. But when it comes to work, it is a fine line of just not jumping in and being like, hey, these are the things that you just need to, you know, because I could see it and I'm like, ah. And yet, and then, you know, be within the confines of how quote unquote normal people understand the world, right? Without freaking them out. Cause I could tell when I say something to somebody and it freaks them out it drives them into a place of fear. And I like tap into it. And I know that it's also my way of showing them in the way that they need to, that that's there. The fear is there, right? And I just get to feel it and witness it. And then that's it. Like the moment I feel that frequency, I'm like, okay, move, like shift the conversation so that they recognize that it's there. And then eventually as I'm talking or, you know, we're moving or whatever, I could feel the dissipation of the fear. But the first couple of times that I felt it, I was like, holy cow, what is this? And then it's just an introduction. So then I'm like, okay, I'm just showing them an aspect of a human being that we can be, that they're not opening themselves up to. For the people who are open, it's just amazing what actually happens in that moment of fluidity of conversation. And then, you know, doors open, or in a way it's almost like they had blinders, and then they see that vision, like your dream, you know, they all of a sudden recognize that it's there, or that they could start tapping into it. And it's a beautiful experience to hold space and witness for them while what they're asking me, or their soul, like I could kind of tell where the soul is asking to be opened. And I just kind of naturally go in there and be like, okay, these are the places. And I have to limit myself, because at a certain point, it gets overwhelming. It's too much information all at once. Whereas I'm like, well, I don't know when the next time I'm going to see you. So I just like do a brain dump. But what I'm starting to slowly notice is, if I just plant that seed, then they'll find a way to unpack it and grow it. And then it turns into something completely different, you know?
I can't even imagine being that young and just experiencing the world in all those different ways. You know, the thoughts that are still in the environment, the emotions of other people, seeing spirits, that must have been terrifying. The other added stressor of all this is, you know, you're surrounded by a culture where I expect there were assumptions about how you should act and be in the world. Mm-hmm. And you're experiencing the world in a totally different way. How did you navigate that? Like, was it terrifying? I can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually not. When you, like, every single child is born with this, right? So a lot of the people that I talk to who have this skill, they at a certain point in their childhood had to shut it down. And they could tell, like, they could tell me at what point that was, whether it's an age range or a time frame or a specific experience. And I think for me, it was around when I was 4 or 5. And those were the seminal moments where I shut that part of me down, and then I became more quote unquote human, you know, in this society. And the experience prior to that was just absolute being one with everything, but knowing that I am experiencing this as a child, as a being. Not totally aware of that, but recognizing that I get to play in this body and running around and being in communication and having a relationship with pretty much everything around me, whether it's the rocks on the floor or the water that I'm splashing in, the trees, the birds, like the insects, you know. And so you see these kids getting really curious about everything and going into things that you're just like, don't touch that, you know? But the reason why is because we all have that openness, that recognizing that there is something, even if it's an inanimate object, that we connect with it. There's a spirit that just, we just connect with it. And that we don't have the vocabulary and the language around it, but we just know, right? And so that's the experience that I'm finally moving back into, which is something that has been interesting in terms of understand, like, the way that I need to shift my narrative and understanding it. But then once you become more human and in the societal dogmatic, you know, these structures, that's when it becomes challenging. And you start remembering, judging, interpreting in a way that's actually not healthy. And I think that is the trauma that we all go through. And then it's like massive downloads of, okay, this is the experience that is still something that I chose to pick up on all these experiences as a child so that as an adult, I start, whether it's being in the space of healing or creating or, you know, something that's better so that we don't have that traumatic shift anymore. It is challenging for me to speak with people who are still in the paradigm of limitations, categorizations, and judgment.
I'm ever so interested, just based on what we've talked about so far. Did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like? And how did you navigate that with all these other experiences?
So I didn't grow up in a religious household. It was very functional and pragmatic. Both my parents are doctors. And in Japan, we just kind of osmosis, you know, through osmosis and our cultural context, we're Shinto and Buddhist. You know, we're Shinto when we are born and married, and we're Buddhist when we die, right? Like the burial is a Buddhist tradition. The marriage is under a Shinto tradition in terms of the way it's executed. And so we have the sort of the religious context embedded in our language. In that, because I also, when I was between the age of 1 and 3, I came to the United States because my father was doing research at NIH in Washington, D.C. And so my cultural upbringing was more like, I think I was put into a Montessori school or something. And so when I went back to Japan and, you know, that there were, it's very like you listen to the elder and you do what everyone does, and it's complete opposite, right? Of a Montessori education. And so when my parents, I think I was in a first grade in a Japanese school, they put me in a Japanese school for first grade, and the teachers were just like, this child just does not listen. And you know, kudos to my mom for just being like, no, you guys don't know how to teach. And so we're going to take our kids out because clearly you have no, you know, educational background or whatever. I mean, like proper ways of educating children. And so she took us out, and then she put us into, my parents put us into a Catholic all-girls school. Primarily because I think my vocabulary was not good enough to go into the American school that they had, like another English school, English speaking school. And so my parents were like, okay, we'll just put all the girls into, like, it was, I have 2 older sisters. So all the 3 of us into an international school. And so in that way, I did grow up in a religious educational context. We had to go to mass every Wednesday. We had to wear a uniform. You know? But what was awesome was I had a very international classmate. You know, like my class was pretty much comprised of all the diplomats in Tokyo, like all the diplomats' kids in Tokyo. So kind of like you know, you grew up in a very international and diverse setting. So I did too, and that was until 5th grade.
Be still, my heart. I love that. I just think, you know, several people have said to me over the years, you know, once they've, because I do not talk about growing up overseas. There are people at Iconic that I've worked with for years that don't know that. Partially because a lot of people don't really care about what people say, and they aren't interested in hearing people's stories. So I'm very circumspect about who I share it with. But when I tell people, sometimes they say, wow, you are so lucky. Hasn't that like changed your entire life? And I like laugh, and I'm like, of course. Yes.
Right. It shapes
like,
you.
I mean, everything from soup to nuts is because I grew up overseas and got to see parts of the world and experience parts of the world that most kids don't get to.
Right.
I mean, I'm so blessed and so lucky. I can't even tell you. I tell this story. It's so funny. When I came back to the States, my teacher put on this at the beginning of the school year, this such an ancient, you know, those old movie projector machines, you know, and it makes that sound, that clicking sound, the crack. So she posted it, and it's this like 10-minute little movie about kids that form gangs and they carry these signs and have t-shirts. And one group says us and the other group says them. And it was a whole movie about how to accept everyone and not other people. And I just remember sitting there in the class. Okay, look, I remember this decades later. So you know it affected me. And I was like, this is the stupidest movie ever. Why do we need this? It literally makes no sense. Like, what do people actually do this? Like, I was looking around, I'm like, I don't even understand this movie. I was so confused by how dumb the movie was. And then, you know, of course you get older and you're like, oh, right. Yes, that's why we need the movie. Okay, I get it. Well, I'm so curious. See, I'm so curious. I'm stroking my beard. I would love to hear any stories you'd like to share of magic or miracles. You know, I've had everything from people seeing ghosts to someone who died three times and lived to best friendships and mothers that were so powerful in people's lives. Mm-hmm. I've heard everything you can imagine. So I would love to hear whatever you'd like to share. It could be one story, it could be multiple stories.
So it's more a way of my understanding my own experiences, but I don't have miracle like experiences where I'm like, oh, that's such a miracle. I also associate that with religion, like institutional religion, that word. And so for me, it's more magic. In the way that we sort of understand magic a little bit more loosely, right? It doesn't have the godly aspect of that miracle has. And for me, like every experience kind of is magic, right? And when I was asking myself, I'm like, okay, just for the context, what would be an experience that I would define as miracle? And the first thing that came to mind was the fact that I'm even here. And then the second piece is that I am experiencing things, like usually it's with insects, you know, or like a small little plant that's growing in, you know, in the middle of a parking lot. And I'm like, oh, it's growing. You know, like it's not dead. And how in the world did you start growing out of like, you know, gravel and cars running all over the place? And yet you're still here and alive. So it's the really small things that I notice that most people don't notice that is constantly reminding me of the magic of every moment. And if I choose to, I could be living in that magical moment and experiencing my life from that place. Even when I came into my own light language, which is basically speaking a completely different language as if it's, you know, fluent, and you're just like, where did that come from? But even that it didn't feel so powerful to me. It was more like, oh, curious, wow, all right, so what else can we do with this? You know, and so it wasn't, and I think when people experience miracles, they feel incredibly deeply, right? And that's why it's memorable. And for I think my experiences, I do, when I see beauty all around me, that's the state that I'm in. So it's almost like, oh, well, you know, Kirsten, how does it feel to be you you know, it's kind of like that, right? It's almost like the fish in the water and asking the fish, like, so how's the water today? Yeah.
I love that analogy. I was going to ask, you know, here's a question. Maybe you can answer this for me. So I just interviewed someone the other day and they had within the last few years, had their first experience of seeing a figure, a ghost by their bed that then disappeared after a few minutes, and it shell shocked them. They're still totally shocked. And then you talk about the spirits. So are the spirits for you in your understanding the same as these ghosts that appear? Like, I'd love to hear your understanding.
So kind of backtracking, my belief is that things show up for you in the way that you need to see it and experience it and hear it and smell it and everything. Like, and so it's really based on your own composition of what you need to see or what you need to experience. So for example, there was a trip that I took in 2018 or so to Egypt. And a lot of people there, and it was a spiritual trip, you know, folks who were getting introduced, a significant chunk of the population of that group was from India. And they just really needed to see globes of light in their photos. And, you know, you hear a lot about you could take photos and you see UFOs or, you know, this and the other. And so, you know, they just kept on, like, every single place that we would go to, they would just, like, take photos. And I'm like, you guys, experience the land, you know, look at it with your own two eyes, not through the lens. And then, so, you know, I asked myself, I was like, why is it that, so I'm like, is there something wrong with me that I don't want to, that I don't feel like I need to do this, you know? And the immediate answer was, you don't need it. Because you know we're here, you know it's there. And so for people who need to see, or that by seeing, it precipitates something else that they also need to experience and learn about themselves. It's like a reflection, right? I think ghosts show up. Thankfully, I don't see ghosts because, you know, I have other family members who do, and it freaked the shit out of them too. Yeah. And, you know, we grew up in Japan where, like, it's ancient over there, you know, thousands of years of all, and we have the scariest ghost stories. And so, you know, thank goodness I don't see that. I think that would freak me out too. But it's also because I feel them all the time. If there's an energy or an entity or a ghost spirit, I will feel it pretty fast. Yeah. And I'll just kind of, like, have a conversation with them.
I'm so curious because I went to this place in Southern Oregon along the coast that is known for being, well, I mean, it's this mysterious spot, you know, and people have surmised or guessed that it's where ley lines intersect or something. Okay. Einstein went there once to figure out what was going on because it was such a notorious place where there was such unexplained phenomena. And I had my own experience there that was really so bizarre. But they had all these photos that tourists had taken, and there were these orbs, these spots of light in them. So are those spirits? What are those?
Yeah, they're just like spirits, energies, you know. Like there's another colleague of mine, her laundry room has a portal. And so, like, you could feel, like, when I went in there, I was like, oh, yeah, you could feel it. Like, I was feeling all these, like, I mean, it was just so much activity. And they were just minding their business, doing their thing, you know. But for her, she could actually see it. And she's like, it's basically like ping pong balls coming out, you know, going back and forth, like going in there, going out, you know, this entire thing. And so, yeah, for folks who that they need that, then, you know, it's going to happen.
I'll tell you a story that happened to me. So my ex and I were in Portland sleeping one night, and it was just this night of blustery winds. And I mean, the winds were crazy. And so out of the bedroom window, we could see the trees bending. And it was just one of those wild and woolly nights where you feel like, I don't know, the great gods have come down out of the sky, and that's what's causing what's going on. And so, you know, we can't sleep because it's the universe is restless, right? Mm-hmm. So we look over. I don't know he's actually watching too. But I wake up and I look over at my neighbor's house. And all of a sudden, I see this thing that looks like liquid mercury come down. And then it attached to his window, went around the frame of the window, and then went into his house. And all I can say is that it looked like liquid mercury. It was like just so malleable. And I was like, what the beep was that? I was like, what the? And my partner turned to me and he said to me, let's just pretend that never happened. And I was like, you saw that too? He did not believe in anything like approaching that. I didn't know that I did, but the fact that both of us saw it and he was like, let's never talk about that again. I thought something just happened. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. And this psychic had told me that there was a portal in that guy's house because he was really aggressive with me and strange. There was something about me that triggered him. Uh-huh. It really literally made no sense because we had never had any, but I triggered him in some strange way. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, there's like a bus station in his house. Like people are coming and going and that's just where it is. It's in his house. And that's how they come into this world. And that's how they leave. And I was like, oh my gosh, he is a bus driver for Portland buses. That's so strange that there's a bus station in his house for spirits. So that happened.
But I'm curious if you've heard of anybody talking about the ley lines and like when you actually went there, did it feel any different for you?
Yes. Okay. So this was so strange because the other two people I went with did not have this experience.
Okay.
So we're driving there 15 minutes outside of getting there. I start getting nauseous. I start getting sick and keep in mind, it's who knows what's going on there. I'm just like sick to my, I don't even know what's happening. And then we get there and you know, you go to the museum and you do all these things. You see these optical illusions. You stand on these spots where, you know, I stood on the spot and my body was moving back and forth. And they said, oh, that's so common. It's like this energy just is coming out. So then we go on this tour. Oh my God. We go on this tour and the docent says, hey, after like 10 minutes of the tour, does anyone want to be a volunteer? And keep in mind that like, I believe it, these are just some of the stories of all the little things that were being shown to me a little bit at a time so that I would start believing in this stuff. Everybody raised their hand. She picks me. She's like, stand over there. And I went and I stood, I looked down, I got in the right place and I looked up and I looked at her and I was like, oh my God, what's in you? Because there was something in her that I did not, and it was looking at me with such malevolence and hatred and anger. I mean, I was like looking at people and I'm like, does anyone else see this? Like, I don't know what's going on here. I was like, I don't know why you hate me so much. It was just roiling off of her in waves. And she picked up this long staff, this long wooden staff. And she, whatever it was like, okay, we're going to start. And it took the staff and smashed it between my eyes in front of everyone. Like it slammed me right between the eyes, like right in that chakra. And I went back. And the second she hit me in the face, whatever it was left was gone. She like was like totally shocked. Everybody had gasped. She hit me so hard. My boyfriend at the time was like, are you okay? She was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how that happened. Are you okay? And I was like, I know what happened. Even though everyone else doesn't, I know what happened. I mean, I'm telling you these stories and I know most people will be like, that's not even real. That didn't happen. But I have like witnesses to multiple of these things. But it was interesting. It was like, complete malevolence. This other thing was squatting inside her. The mm-hmm. second it hit me in the middle of my forehead, it disappeared. And she was just as like appalled wow. and right. aghast.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the rest of everyone mm-hmm. else who was like, oh my God, are you okay? Because she right. hit me hard. So yes. Wow. Yes. Then okay. we left and I was nauseous for like 15 minutes. And then we literally was like, we crossed this boundary and I felt totally fine.
Wow. Yeah. It's, you know, one of the things that I feel about places where mainstream humans or media or whatever you want to call it, gravitate toward the distortion that they create on the land because they don't see, they don't understand, they don't have the sensitivity built in them yet, creates for me what I feel as distortion. So when you're talking about being ill, usually I could tell like my feet will stop and they're like, do not go any further because then you're going to start doing the work of something that is actually not yours. Like, I don't need to do the work, you know, kind of thing. And then I'll tune in and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of pain or suffering or whatever that's embedded on that land. I don't need to go there, you know? And then there are other places like Afghanistan or like, there are certain countries that I'm just like, I really want to go, you know? Because it reminds me of past lives or whatever it is, and the beauty that is actually still there that may not be appreciated as much. And so what you saw, like I could feel, and it's almost like, you know, every human that I have worked on in terms of like, especially with light language, there's an aspect that I could see that doesn't need to be there. And I don't really identify as like super evil. Like I don't define it as evil or good necessarily, but because that's all relative. But there are energies where I'm like, oh, this person is carrying something that she verbally says wants to remove it, but is really holding on to it, you know, like a blanket, like a protection. And when that happens, I'm like, okay, not like I've learned after kind of working with that energy to not interfere. But there is that piece of, yes, are there spirits that are not healthy for us? For sure. You know, just as are there thoughts that are not healthy that, you know, we're churning in our head all the time? Of course. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, when, have you read the book? Shoot. Maybe not. Johns Hopkins University neuroscientist that worked with a Google innovation executive. And they're talking about art and how the creative process opens you up to, they've looked at research on how the creative process has basically activates your sensitivities within your body, your physical body. And this is something that, you know, for those of us who are already there, we're just like, yeah, duh. You know, it's like this is what we had to deal with all our lives, and every single doctor tells us that we're crazy, and you know, some of our fellow people are incarcerated or in institutions, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how you physically experience phenomena. Like you said you see spirits or like energies or entities that are embedded in people.
Oh,
in that instance, right?
Yeah.
But then it's like, are there other instances? So I feel everything kinetically in my body, in my physical body. Mm-hmm. And so if there are energies around me, or even if when you talk about those instances, I could feel the energy from that space and time moving in my body. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't feel good. But for you, it's like, how do you experience energies?
Well, sometimes I don't like it because sometimes I can look in people's eyes and I'm like, oh, I see what's in you. Mm-hmm. And it does not like that I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to look at you anymore in the eyes, and I'm going to get away from you as soon as possible. I don't know what's in them, but there's some things that don't like to be noticed. I went to go see this channeler in California who's pretty well known years ago. And by the way, I'd been told to see the channeler for years and I resisted because I was like, I don't believe in this stuff. And the channeler said to me, "We are so glad you're finally getting, we've been like waiting for you. Finally, you're here to have this conversation." And they said, "You are one of the few people on earth," you know, keep in mind that there's billions of people, so there's lots of us.
Right.
"Few people on earth that can see things as they really are." Uh-huh. Like you can actually see them. And I was like, I don't even know what that means because I don't believe in you. Whatever. And so, you know, sometimes the things that I see are not super fun. I try to be really respectful of them and I backpedal as fast as possible. But I've also, you know, I've also had like, I was having Christmas with my ex and his family, and this voice came to me and said, audibly said, "This is the last Christmas you're spending with this family." And I was like, okay, did anybody else hear that? And why would you say that? And we broke up like 2 or 3 weeks later. So I've had several auditory things happen.
Okay. Yeah.
I've had, you know, I used to go pray at this amazing, gorgeous church. Like it's not even, it's like a complex in Portland that is, hewn into the side of this cliff. So it's, and then on the top of the cliff is like a massive monastery and like labyrinth. I mean, it's very nature-based. It's so gorgeous. So I prayed there and cried there a lot for months. And then one day I had a vision, and I believe it was the vision of the saint whose place I was praying at, but he came and he like laughed at me and made fun of me in a sweet way. And basically was like, chided me and said, "Kirsten, you're always trying to like rush things. You're always rushing things." And then he asked me, you know, would you take, because I was lamenting a partner, he said, "Would you take his journey away from him?" And I was like, let me think about that for a second. I was like, of course not. I'm not a monster. So I've had so many different kinds of experiences, just very, there's such a variety. But like for writing, when I write, you know, I wrote this web series called Poncho in the Car with Noodles. And what happens is it's not me writing. So I'll sit down and literally will write 3 episodes of like 10 to 14 pages each. And they just come out fully formed. And I know it's not me. I mean, Maya Deren wrote this amazing book called The Divine Horseman. And she was this really super fabulous anthropologist who went to Haiti and studied, the ceremonies and voodoo down there. And basically when someone is possessed, like the God comes into their body and they're being ridden like a horse and the God dispenses wisdom and gifts and all this stuff. And, you know, so many of my friends have said, how are you so prolific? Like, how do you get everything done? How do you do all this stuff? And I was like, okay, look, it's not awesome. I'm being ridden. There's something riding me that writes everything for me. And it comes out pretty much perfect because I've sent it to people who work in the industry, film industry. And they're like, this really doesn't need to be edited. This is amazing. And I'm like, I don't know. It's not me. Like, I would love to take the credit, awesome. But it's like literally not me. So I don't know what I'm being ridden by. If it's like a failed playwright, it'd be amazing if it was like Oscar Wilde. And that would explain so much about my life. But who knows at this point?
Oh my goodness.
That was episode 146 of the podcast and my delightful conversation with my dear friend Junko. I so appreciate the way she sees the world, and I hope you appreciate her podcast if you choose to check it out. There will be a link to her podcast, Return to Wonder, under the episode's show notes, as well as on the Treasures page of the website. You know, that's what this podcast is all about, and kind of trying to urge everybody to do. Open your eyes and see the world with the reverence and awe that it deserves to be seen with. I think if more of us experience the world as sacred and enchanting, I think that means that potentially more of us will treat the world with the respect that it deserves. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode, Sasha End, Frank Schroeder, and Music L Files. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, there'll be links to all sorts of groovy things. Junko's website, for example, to her podcast. Books, artists, all sorts of things I hope that lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Junko. Have an open mind and embrace the world the way it is. No matter if you experience it with angels or spirits, the spirits of the land and the water and the wind, no matter how you experience the world, embrace it. See it for the sacred being that it is, and understand that each and every one of those things, the trees, the water, the wind, they each want to have a relationship with you. Beautiful.